Hey und willkommen beim Indie-Film-Talk-Podcast, der Podcast, wo es um die täglichen Freuden und den immerwährenden Kampf eines Filmschaffenden geht. Viel Spaß! Wieder eine Sonderepisode des Indie-Film-Talk-Podcasts, diesmal wieder eine Panel-Diskussion und dieses Mal von den internationalen Kurzfilmtagen aus Oberhausen. Die Damen und Herren von dem Filmfestival haben ein interessantes Panel zum Thema Video on Demand gemacht und reden in dem Talk über die Möglichkeiten, die Video on Demand Filmschaffenden und Filmfestivals bieten kann. Es ist aktuell super interessant zu sehen, wie sich über die Jahre der Video-on-Demand-Bereich durch verschiedene Anbieter immer mehr anwächst und immer öfter der Gedanke bei uns Filmschaffenden kommt, die eigene Filmproduktion nicht nur über Filmfestivals auszuwerten, sondern zusätzlich Video-on-Demand-Dienste zu nutzen, um den Film einer breiten Masse zur Verfügung zu stellen. Das weitere Interessante dabei ist, dass Filmfestivals auch immer mehr das anbieten, dass neben dem Festival-Run der Film zusätzlich in einer VOD-Auswertung auf dem Filmfestival, meistens in einer Kooperation mit einer VOD-Plattform, nachträglich online ausgewertet wird. So laufen die Filme nicht nur im Festivalzeitraum, sondern bekommen eine viel längere Halbwertszeit in der Öffentlichkeit. Zu den Gästen dieses Panels zählt zum einen Margot Keiler, die Programmmanagerin für Festival Scope. Dann der Giacomo Hook, der als Programmleiter für das Kurzfilmfestival in Locarno zuständig ist. Und die Anaïs Lebrun, die als internationale Programmdirektorin für die Video-on-Demand-Plattform Mubi unterwegs ist. Also viel Spaß mit diesem Talk und wir hören uns am Ende noch einmal.
Okay, so let me start with the presentation of Anaïs and Mubi.
Hi, thank you very much for having me today. So Mubi is a SVOD platform available everywhere around the world, which is not focusing on short films. I thought it wouldn't be fair to focus only on the short film today if I need to explain to people what we are about, because we don't do only short film. So life is too short for bad film, that's a bit of our motto, because our editorial line is to focus on quality rather than quantity. Many platforms are providing to the audience a large amount of film, and we decided to provide only 30 film at any moment, with one new film every day that will stay for 30 days only. So there is a rotation system that you can see every day moving. Yeah, that's something we put in place around 6 years after the company was created, because we had a large catalog of film by the past, and we noticed that the editorial work that was needed to be done to highlight the great gem that we were discovering in festival was not possible. If, for example, you had, I don't know, Moonrise Kingdom in the selection, Moonrise Kingdom was always watched, where the tiny short film by Maud Alpi that we discovered in Clermont-Ferrand was never watched because the audience didn't know about it. So this is what happened when we had a large catalog, and after 6 years we decided to reduce the number of film and to focus on one film a day available for 30 film, which is very unusual in the SVOD landscape. So yeah, hop, thank you.
Thank you, Anaïs. We continue with the festival side, and Giacomo will go and tell about the activities of Locarno Film Festival.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you for having me here today. My name is Giacomo. I take care of the short films competition of the Locarno Film Festival. And so this year we tried something new. We created a virtual event on our website. And what we did was basically ask the filmmakers that participated in our 2017 edition, so 2 years before, if they would let us program their films on our website. And we had 27 filmmakers that were interested. And so for about 4 weeks between February and March, we released a short film every day on our website. And every short film was then available for 7 days. We programmed the festival winners during the weekends as a highlight. And then every day we would promote the short film of the day on our website homepage of the festival and on all of our social media. So the films were free to watch. There was no need to create an account. You could just click on it and watch it directly. And there was no geo-blocking either, so you could see the films wherever in the world. It was a really simple thing. We didn't create anything from scratch for that. We tried to use what we had available as technical infrastructure. And so we had a homepage for the event where you could see all of the films that were available in that moment. And then every film would have his own page with the player, of course, and some basic information about the film, like credits, biography, the contact details of the right holders. And the reason why we tried this out was that we were looking for new ways of making the participation in Locarno useful for a filmmaker. And the Locarno short film program is particular in the sense that we only select films of directors that have not made a feature film yet. And the idea is to commit and support really the youngest generations of filmmaker. And one of the things that young filmmakers need the most is probably exposure. And that's something we can help with. So yeah, that's something that we plan to continue doing and develop. And I think there is definitely potential there for us.
Thank you very much, Giacomo. So we move on with presenting Festival Scope.
Hello.
Margot Kehler.
So hi, I'm Margot. I'm working at Festival Scope. I started out there handling partnerships with festivals, and now I'm overseeing more the technical aspects, so setting up the different platforms, developing new features, and also coordinating the Arte Kino Film Festival, which I'll also introduce to you. So Festival Scope Pro is the first platform we developed, which was in 2010. It's a platform that I hope you've at least encountered once. It's a B2B service which is dedicated to promoting independent films, but also in hopes of having it more programmed, more acquisition and more distribution around the world. So we partner with over 90 film festivals. We present their program. We discuss with our partners to see which part of their program they would like to present, which one they think would be the most strategic. And then accredited film professionals can have access to the platform. So you need to be either involved in promotion, production, acquisition, or distribution in order to have access. So for example, filmmakers, unless they've had a film on the platform, don't have access to Festival Scope Pro. So the idea is kind of to create a curated space. So it's not only a screening platform, but also we're presenting them in our newsletter, kind of guiding people who are accessing the platform with recommendations. And then it's not only a space for discovery, but it's also a space for film professionals to get into contact. So for example, each film, there's going to be a contact for the rights holder. So if a programmer is interested in the film, they can reach out and then kind of help the film continue to grow. So now we also work with film institutes and sales agents. So it's not only film festivals who can present their films. So it's really this idea of kind of helping independent films after their festival premiere kind of grow and find a wider audience in other film festivals or theaters, for example. So then in 2016, so when I started out, there was kind of this idea that we found that these films needed to gain more visibility, not only in a B2B context, and we wanted to grow out to a B2C environment. So we created Festival Scope. The idea was to not necessarily provide another VOD platform. I think there's a lot of great VOD curated independent films platforms that already exist. So we wanted to offer something that was a little bit different, and so we kind of see it more as festivals on demand and not VOD. So the idea is to present our partnered festivals for a limited period to a limited audience. So it's really kind of replicating the atmosphere of the festival so that audiences worldwide can kind of have access if they weren't able to attend. So usually each film will be available for about 2 weeks, either during the festival or after the festival. And we make the film available to about 200 to 500 people. It's usually according to the festival capacity theater of that festival. And then also in 2016, we were reached out by Arte to kind of find a collaboration that we could do together. They were interested in creating an online film festival. And we had a lot of fun with the B2C kind of platform, so we were interested in also expanding, and so not having only a rerun of film festivals, but actually organizing a film festival. So like for Festival Scope and Festival Scope Pro, we also developed this platform for Arte. They take care of programming, so it's Olivier Père, the director of Arte France, who selects 10 European films. These are usually films that have had great success among film festivals, but might not have had all of their distribution across European countries.
Thank you, Margot. I would now like to ask you, all of you, that there are two platforms, one festival. I'm kind of a festival representative in a way too. First of all, for short films are difficult to distribute, yes, in general, wherever you look at TV, cinema, and online. So I would like to ask you to give a short answer about your experience. What kind of numbers do you have in terms of audience and views of the films that you present, and how many you have in your catalogue? And I will ask Giacomo, do you think is the benefit for your festival to do that? And also you too, what do you think a film festival could, why should a film festival do something like that? Which is a film festival, of course, is a place in a certain venue at a certain time.
So in terms of short films, I would say for both platforms, it's about 30 to 40%. Festival Scope Pro per year, we have about 3,000 films, whereas Festival Scope, it's 300. For Arte Kino, though, there's no short films for now. I think for short films, they do relatively well, actually the best. So since there's a limited amount of tickets available, they usually kind of sell out their capacity. I think it's a question of people's kind of attention span on the internet. And also the way that we kind of present our films in a curated context, it's curated in the context of a film festival. But these are usually films by filmmakers that are unknown. So the idea is that a lot of people are more tempted to watch 15 minutes of a film, for a festival they don't know. Whereas, 3 hours, no dialogue, they might kind of give up after a little while. And then in terms of the benefits for the film festivals, it's really kind of a great way for them to gain more visibility abroad. I think similarly to the Locarno Festival, what was always surprising is when we have the screening reports, a small film festival in France, so they'll find that their films were screened in like 70 countries, which is always kind of exciting. And it's also for them, the goal of a film festival is helping the filmmakers or programming kind of gain more visibility. And this is really like a useful way for them to do so.
Yeah, so for us, I did my homework and I checked how many short films we have signed at the moment. And it's more than 700. Some that have been shown and that we are willing to show again, mostly like the classic one. And some that have not been shown yet. In terms of reception from the audience, it's really good. Short film are usually the film that work the best on the platform, just because short film content form works better. People at the end of the day are more willing to watch something short than Love Diaz, for example. That's something we've noticed from the beginning, and that's not That's not going to change, I think. So definitely, I think the digital world is kind of the future of short film in terms of distribution. Then, in terms of collaboration with the festival, I think what is super important is that you gain visibility all around the year, where your festival is happening, I don't know, during 10 days, 2 weeks maximum. If you partner with a platform such as FestivalScope or Mubi, then you can have that accessibility and visibility for your film and your editorial line during the year. So that's a super important element.
Well, I think anything that benefits the filmmakers benefits us as well, in the sense that it makes it more interesting for filmmakers to come to us. So in a way, it makes the festival more attractive. And I mean, that's always useful, because you want to be able to get the best content you can. And, you know, the more interesting you are for them, the more likely you are to receive it. And then also there is this aspect to become relevant throughout the whole year, which is something that I think a lot of festivals are trying to do, because you know, it's a lot of work. I mean, we work the whole year to present a 10 days program, and it's a pity, you know, it's a pity not to be able to offer more and to be more present. And also, it has another advantage, another interesting thing about this is that it gives people an opportunity to get a taste of the festival without having to come there. And that's interesting, especially for countries that are very far away. I mean, people may have heard about the Locarno Film Festival and they are not sure whether it's their cup of tea or not. And they're not likely to book a plane ticket and a hotel and come and see for themselves, especially because it's very expensive to travel in Switzerland. So in a way, that's an opportunity for them to get a taste of what our editorial line is. And then if they like it, you know, perhaps they're more likely to come. And I found it was very useful. As, for instance, I was in Clermont-Ferrand this year, and I was talking with institutions and schools and distributors of short films, and not all of them have been to Locarno, not all of them were familiar with with our editorial line. So it was very helpful to be able to say, you know, that just have a look, you know, have a look at what we program on our website, so you get a sense of what we're interested in. And so when they are suggesting film for us, they have a clear idea of what may interest us.
There's something which puzzled me was, and you declared that openly in the press information which you gave out, which puzzled me, is that the timing when you did it, yes, at that time you were already selecting films for the next festival. So like this happened in January, February? Or? So the Locarno Festival is in August. So it's like if a year is a circle, it's just on the opposite side. Why did you choose this time? Why did you not do like others do with like festival scope? And I would like to add a question to you. What do you think about what is better, to have it before the festival, during the festival, after, at a different time? Why not all year? All year, of course, if you look at other platforms, commercial platforms like Netflix, they have a library, and it's there all year, probably not so successful because they don't reach their audience. On the other hand, for a filmmaker, it would be interesting to have a film somewhere permanently to be viewed. That's just a few questions, but basically, the question why at a certain time, for only a week, and yeah.
Well, we wouldn't do it during the festival because then that would mean that the films would probably not be able to participate in other festivals. If the film are available in all over the world, the most of the big film festival have the premiere criteria where they want to have at very least a national premiere. And if the film was available everywhere, that would probably prevent them from selecting those films. So we don't want to, you know, that to be a problem for the filmmakers. The idea is the opposite, is to help them. And so we programmed the films 1.5 years later, which is usually where the festival run of a film ends, you know, so that it wouldn't be an issue for them. And we chose to do it during the winter, mainly because it's the time that is the quietest for us, and also in terms of our communication. So it was helpful to have something interesting to propose in that moment.
Yeah, I think I'll join Giacomo's answer. It's definitely a question of festival premiere. And so it makes sense if you're presenting older films, you can allow yourself to have it for a longer period. Whereas us, because it's not a traditional VOD, it's really as if the screening is an extension of the festival screening. So that's why it's only for a limited period and to a limited audience. I'm not going to lie, it's also one of the main challenges we face as a platform, because when we created Festival Scope, the idea was really kind of to accompany film festivals, not to kind of create any barriers for them or make it more complicated. But what we faced is that, for example, you'll have a film that was selected in Locarno that we're really excited, and the idea is really just to give more screenings to these films. But then other film festivals are going to contact us because they don't want to, they're going to deprogram the film if it's still on Festival Scope. So yeah, there are different challenges to the different models.
And Anna, is MUBI, is also, there is a limitation, but it's a different one as in Festival Scope, as Marco said. In that sense, it's not video on demand what they do. But you have a catalog, you mentioned it's like IMDb, but you don't have the rights all the time.
No, that's only FilmPage. That's a database information. So the film are not accessible, but that needs to have the festival run respected, and that festival premiere respected is something we are facing a lot. Right now we are in the process of closing the film that we are going to be showing next month in partnership with Oberhausen, so we are leaving that that premiere to Oberhausen, and then the film are shown 1 month after. But that's something which we are noticing is becoming more and more flexible, because of course the festival run for a film is super important in the life of a film, but we see more and more interest from directors to see their film seen by a bigger audience, and a platform like MUBI is a way to reach that bigger audience. So we will always be respectful if a festival asks for that premiere, and if we need to wait 18 months to have the film shown, we will of course wait for that time. The most important element for us is to be bringing the film to the audience with a lot of respect for that film. But we see things are moving, because I think people start to notice that the festival audience is different from the digital audience, and they are not incompatible. So yeah, things are moving.
And have you thought of repeating a program which you've done before?
Yeah, I think because of our model of one film a day, repeating a full program would be extremely demanding for our audience. So we can do focuses, but having a whole program will be complicated. We would need to create on the platform a collection dedicated to Oberhausen, for example. That's something we are thinking about, to be honest, internally, about creating separate focuses from the main selection, the main 30-day selection, maybe a channel dedicated to short film or documentaries or a specific festival. So that's something which is internally doing its journey. But right now, with our model, one film a day, we can't give I don't know, 60 slots to a festival.
Thank you. Now I would like to move on to options of cooperations between festivals and platforms. And first of all, if a festival would like to do something like that, like put their program or part of their program online, there are certain technical and also financial budget problems, and of course human resources. You need a lot of people to set up a system like that, to run it and so on. So it's probably unlikely that a single festival, except maybe a very big one, I don't know, and even Sundance is outsourcing that. So it's probably unlikely that a single festival could manage that. So we do have an example, but I don't really have news how it's going, that the Rotterdam Film Festival was opening, but they had a pre-test called Unreleased. They tested it, the festival itself, and now they found it, a company, Unleashed, and we don't really know. We try to contact them. So that's the one single company or a festival I know of who tried to build a video on demand platform on their own. So so obviously we need, if you are a festival, we need to cooperate. Either two possibilities, of course, to cooperate between festivals, to make an alliance. There is an example, it's Doc Alliance, with a very specific market. Of course, it's documentary, and it's not long or short, and it's more a library than a video on demand platform. So that is one option. And the other option, which is most near because there are existing structures sitting here, is to cooperate with the existing platform. So what from your side do you think, how could we develop that?
I think that's what we're currently trying to do as much as possible. But yeah, I agree that one of the main advantages for film festivals is the fact that investing in streaming is extremely expensive. There are film festivals that don't necessarily have a VOD platform, but they can integrate a player like Vimeo within their website. And so this can be done more easily, and so you remain kind of in your own your community. But it's a great way to kind of show the films throughout the year. The fact is that if you're going to use these type of players, you can't kind of guarantee to rights holders the security. So that's one of the reasons why you will have platforms like Mubi, like Festival Scope, is because we've decided to make the investment technically into making sure that the files are protected, and especially keep doing this year after year, because each year the technologies are going to change and there's going to be new challenges. But to continue, I think most film festivals are open to it. I think it's also a great way for them to participate on these platforms, because VOD at this stage, I mean, we're still not exactly sure how it fits in with independent films. It's still in certain ways an experimentation. We're still trying to find the perfect models. So for film festivals to partner with online platforms, it's a way for them to experiment without making an investment, and also collaborating with platforms which are transparent. I think the main thing of not working with kind of a bigger platform is you won't be given kind of feedback on how the films are doing, in which countries are they doing well. Whereas if you're kind of working with a platform which is within the film festival circuit, that's kind of a more loyal partner, then you'll kind of learn more as you go each year.
Yeah, definitely. I think opening your own platform as a festival today would be such a financial investment and resource investment that I like something like Locarno is doing. I'm full of admiration for them, because that's really brave. What I see, how much we struggle every day. Mubi has been around for 12 years, and we are only cash flow positive this year. So it took us 12 years to finally be able to pay our bills. And we it's easy to think that because it's a digital world, it's going to be cheap, but that's not at all. We have 50 people working for Mubi right now to make a film available everywhere in the world every day. So that's also a lot of resource. We have our own developer team, which is an important cost as well. But this is what was the most efficient in terms of cost, is to have our own development and our own CDN and our own technology player, etc. So that's something which is a massive investment. And indeed, working with Vimeo solution is a solution. The platform of Criterion, for example, that just launched, is using the Vimeo technology at the moment. So they propose good solution, but I think right now working with platforms such as Festival or Mubi is the best way to reach an audience which is not yours, because the audience that goes to the cinema watch your film will not necessarily need to watch film online because they've seen them already during the festival. So by launching your own VOD experience as a festival, you need to keep in mind that you are addressing a different audience who doesn't know maybe as much about your lineup and doesn't know as much about your festival than the festival goers, basically.
I'm not sure it makes sense for any festival to have his own platform, especially if the expectation is to run it commercially and to get a revenue out of it. I think it's quite unlikely, to be honest, and it probably doesn't make much sense because, yeah, it's a big investment and you can't expect to have a massive audience as a single festival. For a festival, it's probably more interesting to collaborate and to be more present on several other platforms so you can reach audiences that are not already your audience, and only not to limit yourself to just one thing, but, you know, to try and spread it out, because also there are different platforms for different territories. There's also the issue about the territorial rights. So if you can, you know, collaborate with different platforms in different countries, it's much easier to reach a wider audience.
Giacomo, did you clear the rights as the festival directly with the filmmakers?
Yeah, of course.
For territory or yes?
It was for all, for the whole world. And
would you think that is a part you still could do, like in a cooperation also with the platform? Who would do that work? Is it, yes?
When we work with film festivals, the idea is they first tell us what's the aim. So, for example, there's certain film festivals that decide to only have their films in their own country, whereas other film festivals want it everywhere in the world except their own country. It really depends on their strategy. So that kind of sets up first the territories. And then they send out a first invitation kind of introducing us, and then we handle all of the rights after. So the final word still remains with the rights holders. The rights holders decide if they want to participate, but they can also decide if it's available worldwide, but they know they have a premiere going on in Spain the next month and they're going to block the Spanish territory. So usually the advantage, I would say, of kind of being on another platform is that we're going to handle all of that coordination and not give additional work to the festival, which is already busy programming their own films.
At Mubi?
So they're exactly the same strategy, that it will depend on the kind of needs that the festival has. Some want visibility during the whole year. Like, for example, we have a wonderful collaboration with the director for Tonight in Cannes. Every month we show one film, which is available in a certain number of territory depending on where we manage to close the film. So we really try to adapt our strategy based on what the festival is asking, but also taking into consideration our needs. And in terms of short film, we try to show them as widely as possible. But then if there is indeed a festival premiere in Argentina next month, then we will block that territory, of course. Our goal is really not to block the film in its festival runs, and we are here to bring to that film an audience. That's our main purpose.
And what kind of service could a festival expect working with you in terms of handling the file, making subtitles, and yes?
So handling the file, we do everything in-house, so it's super secured. We have our own CDN, we have our own encoding farm, and I'm also head of the encoding at MUBI on top of the international programming, so I can swear to you that everything will be done properly. And then in terms of subtitles, so thanks to media last year, we had the possibility to start to launch our translation process, and we were able to have a system in place where we are starting to produce on our own translation for the subtitle and cover a lot of European language. So now the system is in place. We are developing more and more translation and hiring translators, etc. So that's something that we've noticed, is that the engagement for a film is always higher if you localize it. So that's something we really want to invest in. And also because we are launching a partnership with Apple, who is launching their own VOD service really soon, and we are one of the first partners to work with them. And Apple is asking for 100% of localization of the lineup we deliver to them. So localization is also something that we needed to invest in to be part of that launch with Apple.
Do you have some suggestion how a film festival could be present all year? Because what Festival Scope is doing is, as you said, is limited to a period shortly after, maybe, and the MUBI is rotating programs monthly. Some festivals might have an interest, as Giacomo said, to be a bit more visible, not just a short period. Yes, the limitation is that the festival is happening only a couple of days, 6 or 7 or 10, and then you put films online again only for a week. We want more. You know what I mean?
So far, I haven't met. Well, I mean, there are film festivals that would like visibility throughout the year, but we haven't really created a partnership. But for a yearly partnership, we work with the Torino Film Lab. And this, the opportunity is that the model is different than the Festival Scope. It's still on Festival Scope, but it's not this idea of a festival rerun. So now, starting this summer, we're kind of creating a thematic selection of their films, and they're available on the platform for free to 500 kind of spectators worldwide. So that's one way of presenting the films throughout the year. To be honest, I think a lot of the film festivals actually do enjoy the kind of shorter period, because as a festival, they also do understand this idea of urgency online, kind of telling someone you only have 2 weeks to watch it, they'll actually watch it. Because one of the things we noticed, so for the first edition of the Arte Kino Film Festival, you could actually reserve your ticket in advance. So people showed this huge interest, they were all booking, they were sold out, we have 5,000 tickets per film, everybody had reserved, and then when the festival started, people didn't actually come and screen them. So I do think that it's advantageous to kind of have it for a limited period.
Yeah, it's easier to promote it as well if it's a shorter period. You know, you can really go heavy on it for a few weeks. Yeah, and if you need to promote it, you know, for a constant period of time, it's more difficult to engage with the audience.
Well, it's interesting because it at least theoretically, the internet is something which is everywhere all the time. It's on always and globally, and we are thinking in models of cinemas online, festivals online, in terms of the time slots, buying tickets, yes, or not. So, yes, I wonder if there isn't a way to jump this hurdle, which is maybe in the mind. At that point, I think maybe we should open to the audience for questions.
I have a question about your screening fee policy in all the free cases, maybe, for the directors, filmmakers.
For the filmmakers, how it works, we don't handle, it goes through the film festival, so they can decide how they want to model and give back revenues to the filmmakers. So if it's a paid event, most of the time, all of the revenues go back to the filmmakers. If it's a free event, there is no screening fee. It's included within the screening fee of the festival. So that goes into the festival's kind of on-demand model. And then for Arte Kino, then yes, there's a screening fee handled by Arte.
So for us, it would depend on the number of territories in which you want to show to have your film shown. We have two different kind of models, the flat fee or the revenue share. These are pretty common models and mostly done by every platform, I think. Revenue share is based on the number of views that the film will get and redistributed by the between different right holders that had a film shown this month. It's in 50-50 model. And then license fee, well, it's a flat fee that we give up front. And my advice, I shouldn't tell you that, but my advice is that if your film will be shown in many territories, ask for revenue share, because it will be more advantageous. But I shouldn't be telling you that.
I'm asking as a producer and director, my question is for the future, the conflict between the visibility of your film, like for study, for students, that the people have access all the time to your film, and the conflict with revenues. It's also including the festivals who want to show the film all the time. And then as a producer, you say you shouldn't because I want to sell a DVD. Like, do you have a vision for the future, how the conflict between access and visibility, because we had complaints like from Berlinale and others that they can't access historical films anymore because people like Netflix have the rights to a historical film, and then you don't have access at all. You know the film exists and you can't show it publicly. So do you see any models in the future to bridge this conflict?
I mean, our goal is to make films that are accessible. The challenge for us is that we only show 30 films at any moment. By the past, we had a larger library, and we noticed that, after 5 years into that model, we almost had to close the company, because in terms of cost, having that large library of 2,000 films everywhere in the world, and with different films from one territory to the other, because the rights belongs to different people, we were not satisfying the audience with that model, and we were not satisfying the right holder, because we were not able to bring back checks that were higher than €3. So at some point we had to make a radical decision, which was we're going to reduce the number of films, still be open about any kind of film as long as it's good. So short film, feature film, experimental film, whatever it is, if it's good, it has a place on Mubi. But yeah, indeed, there is a real question of, we think because internet, everything exists, everything would be accessible, but no, that's not the case at all. And I understand the frustration, but I haven't managed to think a model right now that would make financial sense, where everything could be accessible everywhere in the world at any moment. Because there are so many great films, and we want the audience to discover them. But it costs so much. So yeah, I understand the frustration.
Yeah, I think I kind of join you in the sense that it's not really possible to have it for too long of a period. But also as independent platforms, I think we'll kind of accommodate whatever the rights holder would ask. So for example, with the Torino Film Lab, usually the model was that there were 500 tickets and the film would no longer be available once the 500 screenings had gone. But then if, for example, a rights holder tells us they can only give us the rights for 1 year because the film's going to go on Netflix, then we are going to kind of, you know, accommodate to them. And also with these independent platforms, we're not as competitive. So we for sure have had films online on Movie and on Festival Scope at the same time. So I feel that, you know, the future would be for these kind of independent films is to not fear being and not competing with each other, just kind of being open to having the most visibility, but most probably during a limited period because it's the most realistic.
Just one question. Do the festivals actually pay a fee then if they want to cooperate with Festival Scope?
Yeah, there was going to be a promotional fee. We do handle, for example, kind of the technical fees that's on our side. But because there's resources in the promotion, you know, doing media partnerships, doing some social media campaigns, the festivals are going to usually contribute to that. And it also goes with the subtitles that we were saying. We're trying to have as many subtitles as possible. And one of the things we've noticed was a way of finding kind of a cheaper solution was actually working with media partners in the countries that could have already have their contacts. So, for example, in Italy, we work with My Movies, who's been a longtime partner for the Venice Film Festival. And they handle the subtitles of all of the films when we're partnered with them, and which is super strategic because in a territory like Italy, where they're used to having the film subtitles, it's great to work with them.
The Locarno Shorts Weeks was a free event, so there was no fee involved. And I don't know about the collaboration with Festival Scope. I don't think the films they're free as well. Yeah, so no revenue.
I would like to know a question on the VOD representative about curating, because for the moment I have the impression the question is more how the VOD can be useful for festivals, but now the VOD are sort of filling the gap of showing films that are not accessible normally, but in the very near future it will be more the problem to have too many films, and then the problem is to create a curating or a selection actually of this amount of film. So in this way, do you think that it will be possible also to think that the festival can help actually the VOD platform in terms of giving curatorial touch or something? Is this something I think it's a plus value of the Locarno initiative that is not just making accessible the films, but also saying that are the films that are selected in Locarno. That is something very specific. So how much is important for you, VOD platform, to host and to push forward the curating aspect? So in this sense, how much the festival are important for you in this sense?
Absolutely, that's super important, especially with our model where we are all about curation. We pick only one film a day, not two, three. There is only one, so it needs to be good. And that kind of expertise, so I was saying earlier, I show around 1,300 films a year. I need help. I can't do everything by myself. So I need that network of people and festival to help me to choose what will be the best film to show on the platform and what they are about, etc. And it's not only the festival that are helping me to discover a new film and to program them in the best context as possible. It's also the right order. Like, I'm trying to have almost a really organic relationship with the distributor we are working with or the sales agent, etc., because I want them to share as much as possible about their own knowledge. And as much as I'm sharing with them what we are about, I need that feedback from them about what they think will be the best film to be shown on Mubi. So that's a very collaborative experience in the end, because when you handle such a volume, that would be totally crazy to think that you can do everything by yourself. And you are the expert, so yeah, absolutely.
And for Festival Scope, yeah, the model is the fact that it is the film festivals that are presenting their program, so it's already pre-curated. The idea is still that before we start our partnership is to kind of discuss together and again collaborate, because it's not necessarily what will work in a film festival physical context will necessarily work online. So it's kind of working with them with the program they already have and see how it's possible to make it more successful on the VOD platform.
Especially, sorry, because the short film, one of the challenges for us is the number of short films existing. And with a model with one film a day being shown today, we need that help, basically. Sorry, I'm coming back to that, because feature film is one environment, but short film is so much richer and so much, it's so dense that we can't figure out by ourselves everything. So, yeah. Sorry.
But actually, we need help too. Yes. I mean, the festivals.
So we are here to help each other, basically.
But we are flooded with films, and everybody who's running a festival knows how it's so hard to stop this. It's a tsunami coming of films. Basically, my personal opinion is we are flooded now by new companies, agencies who earn money on short film. Like, almost nobody earns money with short films, but they do by promising filmmakers to send their films and place them to the right festivals. But what they really do, they send their whole catalog. Telling names, but there are several organizations worldwide, not only in Germany, in Italy. There are two in South Korea who send hundreds of films, their whole catalog, to us, and we must do that work. So that is a different subject, but indeed, if a platform would have to do that, it would, who is working globally, I mean, about 10,000 short films which try to come into a festival worldwide every year, yes. Anyway, I thank you for coming. I thank Anais, who's for coming here despite being very busy for preparing a big event soon, and Margot and Giacomo. Thank you very much.
Ich hoffe, ihr hattet Spaß mit diesem Panel und ihr konntet euch ein paar Informationen aus dem Panel mitnehmen. Ich möchte mich zusätzlich natürlich bei dem Team der Internationalen Kurzfilmtage Oberhausen für die Bereitstellung des Podcasts bedanken. Wenn ihr die Oberhausener Kurzfilmtage noch nicht kennt, geht da auf jeden Fall nochmal vorbei nächstes Jahr, wenn die Tore sich wieder öffnen und sie interessante internationale und deutsche Kurzfilme zeigen. Dann kann ich nur noch sagen, wie immer, wenn ihr den Podcast gut findet, wir haben neben der Panels auch reguläre Folgen, wo wir über ein spezifisches Thema mit verschiedenen Filmschaffenden reden. Dann abonniert diesen Podcast gerne bei iTunes oder Spotify oder hört den Podcast auch gerne auf der Webseite www.indiefilmtalk.de und teilt den natürlich auch gerne mit euren Freunden. Uns gibt es noch bei Instagram und bei Facebook. Und ansonsten sage ich nur noch, ich wünsche euch einen schönen Tag, einen schönen Abend und eine schöne Nacht. Und wir hören uns beim nächsten Mal. Ciao.